Okay, this week, another 2 days, is Lag BaOmer. So we're going to talk a little bit about Lag BaOmer. And last night I saw a beautiful piece from Rav Moshe Wolfson, May Live Long. So I kind of changed my plans for the Parsha class. And therefore I don't have a sheet today. I've been really busy, but I think the quality of his Torah will compensate for the fact that we don't have a sheet. He brings down from the Beis Aaron, on the Hasidic Svarim, he says that anyone who believes in Rav Shimon Bar Yochai will have great strengthening in Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. And he says, just like Hashem is Hashem for everybody, so Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is for everybody, even for the lowest Jew. That's what the Beis Aaron says. And to explain what he's saying, he kind of focuses, what is the excitement about Lag BaOmer? Just to refresh our memories now, Well, how many things are we commemorating on Lag BaOmer? How many events are we commemorating? Two particular events we're commemorating on Lag BaOmer. During this period of time, 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva died during this 33 period of time, and they stopped on Lag BaOmer. At the same time, years later, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai passed away, and the day he passed away, he revealed a lot of the hidden Torah, which would become the Zohar and the Kabbalah. He revealed to students. And therefore, tomorrow night, there'll be tens and tens of thousands of Jews who will go to Meiron in Israel and will go to his kever, the place where he and his son are buried. It's like, there's nothing like it anywhere in the world. Nothing like it. The tens, maybe hundreds of thousands of people who go to Meiron, which you don't find by any other human being, Jewish or non-Jewish. You find tens of thousands of people going on the day that they passed away. This is already going almost like about 1,800, 1,900 years ago.
Did he reveal the whole Zohar on the last day?
He revealed a lot. It was an incredible amount what he revealed. So the holy books write like this. They say, during all the days of Sphere, the Jews are anxiously awaiting for Lag BaOmer. Because then what happens is, they call it a hamtoka, a sweetening of the judgments. It gets into all kind of mystical analysis of it that I don't want to go into now. But it's a time of a sweetening of the judgment. And we understand what is the sweetening of this judgment that we find on Lag BaOmer. Obviously, there was some sweetening of the judgment if the students of Rabbi Akiva stopped passing away. But what is it for us to gain and grow from on this Lag BaOmer? So to do this, we're going to move back to the end of last week's Parsha. I technically can talk about last week's Parsha because we know that the first 3 days of the week still are connected to the last Parsha. All the energies of the last week's Shabbos still go to Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. And then we're still even before Shkia. So, and then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday goes to the next Shabbos. And let's go over the last story of last week's Parsha. So now, maybe it's an advantage, because now you guys will at least know what the story was, or should know what the story is, instead of me telling you in advance. The story talks about a person who was the son of a Jewish woman who goes out and curses God. He curses God, and the Jewish people don't know what to do with him until God gives instructions as to how he is supposed to be put to death. And the rabbis discuss, when the word it says, Vayetze, he went out, and he went out and cursed God. And they ask, where did he go out from? So the Medrash gives two different answers. And one answer is, he went out from the section of the Torah that was given over right before this story. And what was that section of the Torah that was given right before the story? The Torah tells us the mitzvah of putting the 12 showbreads on the shulchan, on the table in the Mishkan. The table in the Mishkan, which we talked about a number of months ago, every Friday, 12 challahs were put on that table. And when did they eat those 12 challahs? It would sit there for a week. would sit there for a week, and then they would take it out, and new chalos would be put in. So when this fellow heard about this, he mocked it. It's interesting, the wording of the Midrash is legleg, legleg. It's like to mock. Very interesting. And he says, is this the way of a king to eat? The way of a king is to eat fresh bread every day. And now the king of all kings has bread that's 9 days old? What kind of business is this? That we take the breads out after 9 days? And therefore, he went out and cursed God for this. Second, Medrash tells us that where did he go out from? He went out from the court of Moshe Rabbeinu. And very upset with the judgment that was happening. This fellow wanted to establish his tent in the camp of the tribe of Dan. And he was not permitted to do so. He says, I'm a Danite. And they said, well, on your mother's side, but not on your father's side. And it was found out through a very complicated story that I don't think it's necessary for us to discuss in great detail now. But he thought that his father, who had raised him, was Jewish, like his mother was Jewish. Then he suddenly found out that his father that raised him was not his biological father. And he found that out when that adoptive father died abruptly in the revolt of Korach. And he found out that his real biological father had raped his mother when she was in Egypt. And his biological father was an Egyptian. So now, the people in the tribe of Dan said, well, tribal lineage goes after the father, not after the mother. And therefore, get out of here. You have no business over here in our tribe. Remember, when the Jews went in the desert, they housed themselves by tribes, 12 different sections. Tribe of Dan was in the rear, and he was there. And they said, sorry, you're going to have to leave. You have no business over here. So he got very upset at that, and he said, we're going to take this to Moshe Rabbeinu, took it to the Supreme Court. And Moshe says, they're right. Out you go. Well, where am I supposed to go? Well, you'll have to be outside the clouds of glory. That's all. The clouds of glory surrounded the 12 tribes. And there'd be some people who would be outside the tribes of glory, like the mixed multitudes, the Egyptians who want to convert to Judaism. They were outside the clouds of glory. So you go outside with them. He said, I don't have none of this. And he curses out God. So there's two versions of what happened. And why did he curse him out? Well, the second story makes at least a little sense. You would curse God out if you didn't have a place to stay in the desert. But the real question is, what's the first one? So the challahs are a little bit spoiled? I mean, after all, he's not even a Kohen. He's not even the one eating it. So for that, you go and curse out God? So that's a difficult thing we have to understand. Now, here's the next part we're going to talk about is fascinating. It's really fascinating. I talked about it about a month ago. I don't remember which class I talked about it. I don't think it was in this class. It's really a fascinating idea. I don't know why Hashem is keeping me seeing this time and time again. There must be a reason. The Shulchan Aruch tells us like this. If you want it, someone will ask you, what day are the holidays? What day of the week do the holidays come out? There's a trick, a mnemonic trick, that you could figure it out. Do you remember which class I said this in, Yaakov? I don't remember. I know I said it once. No way. I know it's been a while. Anyway, let me explain.
Anyways, I read about it, so.
Okay. They tell that if the rabbis say that if you look at the holiday of Pesach, and the holiday of Pesach in the Torah has seven, but this thing I'm going to tell you, I know you didn't hear. There's 7 days of Pesach in Israel. 7 days. And this year, first day was Shabbos. Second day was Sunday. All the way till Friday. So, by knowing what day of the week every day of Pesach comes out, you can know all the holidays. What day of the week, same day of the week it's going to come out on. And the way we do this is from a formula of Hebrew letters, alphabet, which is called Atbash. Atbash. Now, what does that mean? If you look at the 22 letters of the alphabet, starting with the first letter is Aleph, the last letter is Tav. Okay. Second letter is Beis, second last letter is Shin. Third is Gimel, last one is Resh, fourth is Dalet, fourth one is Kuf. And so Aleph and Tav is At. And Beis and Shin is Bash, Gimel and Resh is Gar, Dalet and Kuf is Dak, At Bash Gar Dak. And you can go further on. So he says, applying that rule, so now we could, you need a pen?
Yes. I can't believe I'm here.
By all means. By all means.
Thank you.
So At Bash Gar Dak, and then Hats Vap. All right? Okay, and Zap. Anyway, so look, if you look, the first day of Pesach is Aleph. The first day of Pesach, right? Okay, first day of Pesach this year came out on what day? Remember? It's not that long ago. It was Shabbos.
Oh, the day, not the...
Day of the week. It was Shabbos.
It was Friday night.
Well, that's called Shabbos.
Oh, okay, fine.
It's called Shabbos. Every day starts the night before, right?
So you're not differentiating between Yom Shishi and Shabbat.
It's not Yom Shishi. Shabbos is Shabbos. Friday night is not Yom Shishi anymore. When you made the Seder Friday night, you made it on Shabbos.
Okay?
Now, so that's Aleph. Aleph, the first day of the holiday. So, Tav is the one that's on the other side. Tav is the beginning of the word Tisha B'Av. So Tisha B'Av this summer is going to come out on Shabbos. It's going to be pushed to Sunday, obviously, but it's Shabbos. The first day of Pesach is always the first day of Tisha B'Av. A lot of people know that anyway, but now we go on. Second day, Beis. Second day of Pesach was Beis. What's on the other side? Shin. At Bash. Beis and Shin. Shin stands the word Shavuot. And sure enough, the second day of Pesach was on a Sunday. And Shavuos is going to be on Sunday. Saturday and Sunday. That's amazing. Now, third day of Pesach is Gimel, which was on a Monday. And what's on the third last letter is Gimel is Resh. And what does Resh stand for? Rosh Hashanah. And the third day was on a Monday. So this year Rosh Hashanah is going to be on a Monday. That's how it does. Don't ask me how. That's the way it works. Is that amazing? Fourth.
You didn't know it'll be here?
It always works out this way.
Really?
With a fixed calendar, it always works out that way. Okay, now we go to Dalet. Dalet is the fourth day of Pesach. It's already Tuesday, right? Tuesday. Shabbos, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. The fourth day. And what goes according to that? Kuf. Dak. Kuf. What's Kuf? Kuf stands Kriyat Torah. So that is Simchas Torah. We'll be on a Tuesday. Okay? We'll be on a Tuesday. It's Simchas Torah. All right? And now, and certainly once you know certain things, you know other things for sure. If you know when Rosh Hashanah is, for example, then you know when Sukkot is. Because Sukkot is just 2 weeks later. Same day of the week. That's going to fit in real good. Okay, so far so good. Let's do the next one. Number five is the letter He. Fifth day of Pesach, which is on Wednesday, correct? Wednesday. He. And what goes to that? He goes, the other side is Tzadi. The letter Tzadi. He Tzadi, right? Something like that? Tzadi stands for Tzom. Tzom Kippur, the fast of Kippur. And Yom Kippur is going to be on a Wednesday. That's really nifty. That's really nifty. Okay, so far so good. Now, the sixth one, they tell us as well. It's interesting, I'm saving that for a minute. The seventh one, I said it Shal Shudas, and I remember. I said it Shal Shudas. I said it Shal Shudas on the last day of Pesach. All right? Now, it only goes till six. For some reason, they didn't tell us the seventh. For some reason, it doesn't go to anything. Seventh day was Friday. The seventh letter is, the seventh letter is Zion. And what would be the letter that is the seventh last is Ayin, Ayin. So certain Zionistic rabbis would suggest, Haredim will not suggest this. I didn't say, well, guess what? Friday, when is Yom HaAyin? Atzma'ut is Friday. You'll like that one, Yaakov. Yeah, you didn't hear that. Did you know that one?
No.
Okay. So in the modern, you know, religious Zionistic websites, they'll say that Zion is the seventh day of Pesach, is Friday. So Ayin, Atzma'ut. But in the Shochar doesn't mention the Ayin. It's a mystery. Why? Maybe. But anyway, so that, well, okay, I had to throw that in. And then if there's an eighth day of Pesach, I said it's Shal Shittes. If you recall, the eighth day of Pesach, it's already, so it goes back to Shabbos, right? So what Shabbos is that? So he says that's Tisha B'Av again. But this time it's what? It's when the Mashiach will come on Tisha B'Av. Anyway, but let's go back to six. So everything really is pretty nice. Okay, the seventh is a little bit questionable. Not everyone's going to agree with it. But Shulchan doesn't bring what it's seventh. It just only goes till the sixth.
What is that called, this whole thing?
This mechanism?
Yes.
First letter, the last letter?
Well, what is it? If I want to Google it and read about it, you don't get it all.
You know what? You're going to listen to this tape.
Oh, okay, fine.
But that's what it is. It's real easy. It's real easy.
No,
you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
No,
Shabbos.
I've got 12 letters. You know?
You got 6. You get 6 days. First day will always parallel. Aleph will always parallel. What? Tisha B'Av? Second day will parallel Shavuos. Third day will parallel Rosh Hashanah. Fourth day will parallel Simchas Torah. The Aleph is the first day of the week.
That's it. But so the Aleph basically, well, that's just those going are the, through 1, 2, 3, and then you pair them with the letters from the other.
That's day. Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
And that just, like, how long does it go on?
Well, it's only 8 days of Pesach.
Oh, that's it.
But all those letters, in Jewish, wording, you know, it goes all the way, all 22, until they come right next to each other, till Chaf and Lamed. That's the 11th and 12th letter of the alphabet. But let's leave it for what pertains to us. Let's not go totally off topic. Now, the fascinating part is the sixth day of Pesach. The sixth is a Vav, and the sixth last letter is a pay. So now, what would you think starts with a pay? Purim! Purim! So if the sixth day of Pesach is going to be what? Was Thursday. That means next year, Purim's going to come out on a Thursday. Because everything else, remember, Pesach's like what's coming up as a problem.
Purim was Thursday.
1 minute. Just wait a minute. So if you're going to look now, Purim next year, it ain't on Thursday.
It's Pesach.
No, it can't be Pesach for Pesach.
It's
no, it's not. It's always talking about all the holidays, not its own holiday. So the rabbis say like this, you know what it is? The sixth day of Pesach conforms to the day of Purim before Pesach. Before Pesach, because this year, in the past, 2-3 months ago, Purim was on a Thursday, and so was Pesach on a Thursday. Okay, this is what the rabbis tell us, and they tell us one other interesting ditty. We'll come in a minute, but we got to wait. We got to figure out. Wait a minute. The first five are okay, but the sixth one's a major problem because the whole idea is Pesach is supposed to tell us. Remember, Pesach is the month of Nisan. It's the beginning of the year. It's the first holiday of the year. So it makes sense that the first holiday is going to be the source of all the holidays for the rest of the year. And therefore, they're going to fit into the same day of the week. That's what Pesach is generating, these holy energies. So as we move into the calendar, it's going to manifest itself in a different holiday on that day. But so what do you tell me about Purim that it's backwards, right? Well, in other words, you come to Purim. What does it help me? It was very helpful that I told you these now, because now you know when Yom Kippur is going to be. What day of the week is Yom Kippur going to be? What do we say? It's going to be on a Wednesday. Yeah, you know, you always know when you have Pesach, you know all the holidays. Hey boy, what a help thing to know that Purim was. That's not a very helpful device, right? And better yet, when a person comes to Purim and he wants to know, you know, he says, let's say it's a month before Purim, and the guy says, "Hey, when's Purim going to come out this year?" You know, I'll tell you when Purim's going to come out when Pesach comes. Now that's not it's funny, but it's real. You know why? Because a month before Purim, nobody knows when Purim's going to be in the olden days. The olden days, we now have a fixed calendar. Every year, we know exactly how many days is each month, and we know, we can project in advance when exactly every holiday is going to be. But in the olden days, when we sanctified the moon with testimony of witnesses, we weren't sure exactly till the month before, till Rosh Chodesh, to know when Purim was. When Purim is going to be? Purim is going to be when you tell me when Rosh Chodesh Adar is. I'll know when Purim is going to be. But I'm not going to know when Purim is going to be.
Wouldn't that be true of any holiday?
No. Well, that true. But now what I'm just saying this. If this mnemonic doesn't help us for Purim, that's the whole point. This mnemonic, you say, well, on Pesach and everything, well, it's going to work backwards, right? So what do I care? So that's a real question. So it, like, let's forget it. You're good for five. But what is this that six tells me retroactively was Purim? So like, what's going on? But they mentioned it. They mentioned it. So there must be something to it. So that's going to be a question we have to deal with. Now you're wondering, what does this class have to do with Lag BaOmer? Well, there's one more mnemonic they tell us over there. It says, and the last sign is the word Peleg, Pei Lamed Gimel. Once we got the Pei of Purim, Peleg, the day of the week that Purim comes out on is Lamed Gimel, is the day of the week that Lag BaOmer comes out on. So when you come to the sixth day of Pesach, you know two things. You know, number one, that the Vav of the sixth day of Pesach goes to the Pei of Purim, which passed. And you also know that Purim, Peleg, Purim and Lag BaOmer on the same day of the week. So at least you're going to know that the sixth day of Pesach really is Lag BaOmer comes out. We got to kind of go a little bit around. The Vav to the Pei is Purim, then Purim back to the Leg is Lag BaOmer, Peleg. But obviously, we have to understand what is the connection that Lag BaOmer has to Purim. There must be a connection of Lag BaOmer to Purim. And that's how I'm getting myself into Lag BaOmer Torah. Okay? So that's the issue over here. So briefly, the main questions are, number one, what is the idea that Lag BaOmer is going to have the sweetening of the just judgment? Number one. Number two, why was the Jew who was cursing out God, why was he cursing God? Because of the breads. What did it bother him so much? Number three, what does it help us to know when Purim was from Pesach, as opposed to the others that tell us the future? And also, what's the connection between Purim and Lag BaOmer? Those are the four questions we want to talk about. So Rav Wolfson, he says, let's talk about Purim for a few minutes. There's a medrash that in the beginning of the Megillah, very early beginning, it tells us about the advisors of Achashverosh when he was sitting at the party, and they all had funny names, Karshina and this one, and one was Memuchan. And the rabbis say that the names that were given to them in the Megillah weren't their real names, but the rabbis put them to be their names because each, Medrash says, each one who was an advisor to King Achashverosh, they played on their name as if to say, well, you guys do what the Jews do that's so good that you want to not want to hurt the Jews. So let's pick the one that's relevant to us, Memuchan. One of the guys was Memuchan. Now, who was he really? Haman. Haman was Memuchan. It's the only time we say, Haman, we don't bang with the graggers. It's a sleeper. You know, the clever guys, when they get to Memuchan, they bang also. You wonder, what are you banging for? Because it's Haman. He was called in the beginning of the Megillah Memuchan. And the Medrash says, why is he called Memuchan? Because Memuchan is from the source word Muchan, to prepare. So the Medrash says on his name, they say, Memuchan, they say, did you ever prepare something like the Jews did when they prepared the 12 breads in the Beis HaMikdash? In other words, the Medrash say they were given these names, the author of the Megillah called them, and those weren't the names that they had, you know, that they knew themselves by. His name was Haman. But the author of the Megillah, Esther, says, we're going to call him a Mukhan. Why? To say, well, do you think you ever was Mukhan? You ever prepared anything like the Jews prepared something? They prepared the showbreads. What did you prepare? That's what the Medrash says. And there's two questions on that. Number one, why are they connecting that aspect to Haman? What does that have to do with Haman? There's a lot of things we could say. And moreover, there's a lot of things that Jews prepared besides breads. They prepared the ketores. They prepared the menorah candles. They prepared a lot of things. Why are you picking the breads? So now here is the answer to the last question, and we're going to roll backwards here. So he says a great idea. This is the, now the next 10 minutes is the core of the class. This is the idea you walk out with today. What was Haman's main criticism and his main point of offensive against the Jews? Why did he think he could beat the Jews when so many others couldn't? And it's hinted to in the Megillah. First of all, we're told nobody could speak Lashon Hara as good as Haman could speak about the Jews, Lashon Hara. And what was his main criticism? Haman said, listen, I'm not going to argue. He was not a person who is like now the people who falsify history. He wasn't going to be like a Holocaust denier. He wasn't going to deny the great history that the Jews had. By the Purim story, the Jews could look back over 1,000 years, right? The Purim story happened around the year 3,400 of creation, give or take a few years. And from Avram, who came in the scene in the year 1948, there's about 1,400 years of a proud heritage. And Haman did not deny the fact that the patriarchs were extremely holy people, and they served Hashem amazingly. And it continued. But Haman said there is a law of nature. Now, I'm sure he didn't use this word. But there's something called the law of entropy. Do you know what the law of entropy is?
Randomness.
He's going to learn it. No, it's not randomness.
So the
things floating. What? What the law? Did he come to a Torah class to know science?
Yeah.
The law of entropy means... Long means everything is destined to decompose and fall apart. Nothing lasts forever. The law of entropy. The law of entropy. So, you know, you get everything in the world eventually crumbles over time. It could take thousands of years. Nothing stands forever. The law of entropy. And it applies in so many ways. So many ways. Simple. A human being. Human being, we start young and we're full of energy. And we're doing good for about, you know, 30, 40 years, you know, and somewhere, you know, around year 40 or beyond, depending on how healthy you are. We hit the peak, and then, it's coming around this little side, starts with, you know, back aches and this aches and a little bit of a wider belly and, you know, whatever, you know, it's just, and you start going down fast or going down slow. And you were just fighting, and people going to the clubs all every day to try to fight that law of entropy. You could slow it down a little bit, but you ain't going to beat it. Sooner or later, you start to fall apart. You just fall apart, and you wither away, and you just die. And the only way you avoid that is if you get hit by a truck. Yeah, you could be 50 years old, get hit by a truck. I was a healthy every day of my life. But nobody wants that. For some reason, people want to live as long as they can. And all of them, you know, just, they, I don't know what the verb of entropying is. Entrophize, I don't know what it is. But you go down and you fall apart. That's it. We all will be victims of the law of entropy. You know, you gotta have trees and things. After, they're not going to last forever. It only lasts so long, falls apart. Everything falls apart. How about ideologies? Do you know of any ideology that has stayed for thousands of years? Now, there's great, you know, the ideologies, they rise and they move and they reach heights. But, you know, let's talk about Greece. Let's talk about Rome. These amazing power and at their might. Unbelievable. And then what happened? A couple hundred years later. Beep. Is there any country in the world that didn't have this entropy effect? Egypt. Even England is going down fast. And it used to be 100 years ago, they said that the sun never sets on the British Empire. If you know that famous line, because they had colonies everywhere. So, and now, Britain's like garnished. It's almost just at the bridge. It soon will be, once all the Muslims get in there, it'll be totally garnished, right? America, depending on what Trump does, all right? But it's going down. Everybody goes down. And how about religions? Also go down. So Haman was very clever. He knows there's a law of entropy. So he doesn't disagree. The Jews were mighty. No question. The patriarchs, unbelievable. And Haman would never dare to start up with the patriarchs. They'd wipe the floor with him. You know, Avraham Avinu was a great soldier. He could destroy four kings. He couldn't do anything. And the Jews were good for a while. But slowly, 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 you get old. And by the time the Purim story happened, he said, these people have become old. They're getting old from mitzvahs. And they do them without any vibrancy. It's dry service of God. And that was the Lashon Hara he said about the Jews. But really had what to base it on, because that's how the Jews were living at that time. Listen, after all, it was less than 70 years before that the temple was destroyed. It doesn't get destroyed for no reason. You know, there's got to be a reason. The Jewish service they weren't serving God the way they used to. So he figured that's it. Now, from a observational point, he seemed to be very correct. And that's how he figured that's how he could destroy the Jews. Because they're going to be a victim to this law of entropy just like anybody else. And now's a great time to knock them down. To this, the answer to him is the showbreads. Those 12 breads. The Medrash says he's called Memuchan in the beginning of the Megillah. He's called Memuchan, prepared. He said, have you ever prepared showbreads like the Jewish people prepared showbreads? Well, that's not just a cute line. There's something well behind this, because this line is it's the attack against Haman's philosophy of life. Now, what do you know about those 12 showbreads? First of all, why 12? Take a wild guess why it's 12. 12 tribes. 12 tribes. Now, the 12 tribes, interestingly, if you know another thing with letters here, the name of Hashem is spelled Yud, He, Vav, He. Now, you can jumble around those letters in how many different ways? The same four letters, just change the order on. How many ways? Now, normally, if you know a math equation, 24. It would normally be that way. That's a great guess. One problem. Two of the letters are the same.
Oh, right.
So if two of the letters are the same, what happens to that? You were right. If there were four different letters, 24 would be right. But if two of the letters are the same, what happens to that number 24? It turns in half. It's like, so it's only 12. There's 12 ways of spelling Yud, He, Vav, He. Because the Yud starts with a Yud, so you could do it three different ways. Yud, hey, vav, hey. Yud, hey, hey, vav. And yud, vav, hey, hey. Those are the only three you could do. And each one of the letters can be changed around that way. So it's 12, trust me. Okay? So the way you juggle around Hashem's name, it's in other words, that's 12 months. There's 12 months, 12 tribes, 12 manifestations of God's name, the way it's juggled around, because it manifests itself, Hashem's power manifests in 12 different ways. 12 different ways. Every month it manifests, every tribe, every month, every configuration of Hashem's name is aligned, all three together. Another topic for another time. But anyway, so what does that tell us? That tells us that they would put the 12 loaves of bread every Shabbos. And what happened? It sat there for a week. And what happened when they took it out at the end of the next week? What would it look like? Exactly. They were piping hot, steaming, nothing wrong with it. Okay? Now, by nature, what would happen if you put bread that does not have preservatives, make an amazing challah, and you put it on the table, and you let it sit there for 7 days, what's going to happen to it? What's going to happen? It's going to be hard, moldy, little blue dots. Right? And the guy and the Jews, this Jew who got upset, he says, is this which is going to serve the king? And what happened was, and this was the great lesson, you know, the Beis Hamikdash was a great tourist attraction in a positive way. You know where the first Ripley's Believe It or Not museum was? You know where it was? In the Beis Hamikdash. Believe it or not. Believe it or not. 10 miracles every day in the Beis Hamikdash. 10 miracles. Believe it or not, Ripley. And one of them was, and the Jews would come on the holidays, Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot. And one of the attractions, you know, you go on a vacation, you know, these places of with tourists. Oh, here's the 50 things you do when you go to Kanab, Utah. You know, did you see a wigwam? You know, did you watch an old Western movie? You know, well, you came to me, did you do these 10 things? Did you see these 10 miracles? And they go, and one of them was, everyone go right to the temple as far as they could go. The Kohen would move the curtain, and you could look straight through to the table. You couldn't go there. You could look from a distance. And the Kohanim, oh, it's Friday. You're going to see the most amazing, it's Friday. These are the breads that were a week ago put in. You know what I mean? Some people came the week before. And they said, okay, we're going to look. They're changing. They're putting the challahs in now. I'm coming back next week. And next week, what do they see? The challahs are fresh. And the Kohen would pick up the challahs. They look and see how much the Jewish people are beloved before God. Now, why did they say this? Because that's what the challahs were representing. That even though according to nature there's a law of entropy and everything has to get old and moldy and fall apart. But Hashem says, if you're in my place, if you're in my holy temple, nothing falls apart in my holy temple. Nothing. Because I'm an infinite being. God is the only one who doesn't fall to the law of entropy. And anyone who's totally connected to God does not have to fall to the law of entropy. And these challahs have been sitting in my house for 7 days. Time does not affect them at all. And guess what? These 12 loaves correspond to my 12 names, corresponds to the 12 tribes. And I want you to know that every tribe, no matter how old you are, old meaning how many years away you are from Avram, which is the youth, Avram's the youth of Judaism. Yitzhak, Yaakov, youth. But then we're getting older. We're already 1,500 years old. And you know what? You're just as fresh as those challahs. A Jew is so fed because the ravages of time do not ravage a Jew. If you stay close to God, none of that's going to happen. All right? And they picked up those breads they shed and they said, listen, Hashem's love for us is just as fresh as it was for Avraham Avinu. And each and every one of you 12 tribes, which correspond to the 12 ways of writing out Hashem's name, just like we know, are you allowed to erase those four letters, no matter how they're arranged? Are you allowed to erase them? No. None of God's names will ever be erased. That means none of the tribes will ever be erased. No matter how low it may look, no matter how bad, no matter how old you may think you are not old, because there's still that connection to that freshness of the patriarchs that's lying in every single Jew. And that's why this is the opposite of what Haman said.
Haman's
what?
Don't you allow to erase?
Well, that you only do to make peace. That's how important peace is. But that's erasing God's name to make sure the marriage doesn't entropy. You know, relationships also can suffer from entropy, can't they? You were married to somebody. When you were married, it was fresh. Everything was amazing. Then after 10 years, been there, done that. Old wife, old husband, you know. Let me get a new one. Let me trade in for a new one. No. that relationships can suffer from entropy too. Hashem says our relationship didn't suffer, and that's the way to solve it. Bedavka, so it shouldn't go to that. Hashem says you're going to erase my name to keep it going. That's how far it goes. So this is the opposite of what Haman said, and therefore Hashem showed this miracle. So that's why the Medrash says, Haman, did you ever prepare loaves of bread? Because if you prepare loaves of bread, you know you're not going to win. Because you, no matter what you think you see, the Jews never get old. We never get old. We never fall apart. The only religion that doesn't fall apart. The only religion that grows. I'll give you a good example. How many books did we have when we started this religion? 24. Not even. 5. As we grew more, 6, 7, 8, 9, 24 books of the Tanakh. Then all of a sudden, 6 books of the Mishnah, 70 books of the Gemara. This is the only religion where our books keep growing and growing and growing, and the scholarship grows, and we become greater and greater and greater. The great secrets of the Torah were only revealed later on. We're a religion that's vibrant, that grows. It's unbelievable. So this is what the message of Purim is. The message of Purim is for the Jews to know that whatever situation they're in, they always, the love of Hashem is fresh for us. The time never wreaks havoc on the love between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And even more, even when we are actual sinners, when we're mamish sinning terribly, Hashem's love is still fresh with us. Now, let's see, I'll give you an example in the Purim story. What's the greatest example is? When the Jews went to the party, would you say that was a good thing or a bad thing? Very bad. Very, very, very bad. Right? But what did Hashem show them to how much he loved them? While they were so bad, what did Hashem do that they, in hindsight, would see how much Hashem loved them? What happened at that party? Vashti was killed. Now, nobody realized it at the time, but that was the only way the Jews were going to be saved. So while the Jews were in the midst of being so terrible, Hashem was saying, I still love you, and there's no difference how I love you. Because I'm going to already make sure that the woman who wants to destroy you will get killed, and in her place, Esther's going to come, and that's going to save the Jewish people. So that's a beautiful proof that Chassam Sofer brings down, that even though they sinned at the party, at that point Hashem prepared everything. And that's what Purim is. Purim reveals this love never grows old. That's how far it goes. And they show that Purim reveals that this love is beyond time, beyond logic. It's a love which transcends love and logic. That's what Purim's all about. Okay. So now you got to listen carefully to this next part. It's a little tricky, the next part. You got a halt cup here. So when we talked about the Akbash Gardak of Pesach, yeah? So 5 out of the 6 are telling us about the future, right? So let's think about how this exactly works. Well, Pesach is, we'll call it, the king of time. Remember, we make our calendar based on the moon, and that's time, and the first holiday is Pesach, and that sets the tone for the time. It's the head of all the holidays. It decides when the holidays nourish from the days of Pesach, and that's why we have this sign. That means, you know, there's something about the first day of Pesach, there's an energy there that goes into Tisha B'Av. And there's something about the second day of Pesach that goes into Shavuos. That Shavuos wouldn't be Shavuos without the second day of Pesach. It just nurtures it. But when you come to Purim, you see, Purim is the holiday, as we said, it transcends the laws of time and the laws of nature. Because Purim is the holiday that shows the Jews don't grow old. And the rules of time don't work. Purim is what we call Lamala Min Hazman. It's beyond time. Because normal laws of common sense and logic in nature don't apply to Purim at all. And therefore it's impossible that Pesach could define the time of Purim, because Purim's beyond time. And that's why it can't do that. Right? Purim shows that time does not affect us. Usually time is the most brutal attack on everything in the world. As time passes, we fall apart. Now, time, so therefore Pesach could put into time what's going to happen. But it can't do it for Purim. Because Purim's beyond time. So what does Purim do? Purim teaches us there's a time when Hashem's going to reveal beyond time in time. Hashem's going to reveal beyond time in time. And when's that going to be? When Mashiach comes. Then we're going to see things that are unbelievable, that all of a sudden that we couldn't figure out. All of a sudden it's going to all make sense. So Pesach cannot establish when Purim will come. But you know what? Funny enough, that even though Purim nourishes from Pesach, but not from the Pesach of us going out of Egypt, it's going to nurture from the Pesach in the future. That's right, exactly. Why Megillah's the only book? There's a Pesach in the future. The Pesach that we don't know when it's going to happen yet. It's the Pesach, the ultimate redemption. The final redemption. The final Pesach. The Pesach that nobody knows anything about. But you know what? Purim now nurtures from that Pesach. You know why they have it in common? Because they're both not stuck in time. The Pesach when Mashiach comes, it's out of this world. The world will be different. And Purim now nurtures from that Pesach. Okay? And then we'll understand. And what's going to really happen? What's going to happen is that thing, the essence of every Jew, is going to be revealed at that time. Because why is it that time does not destroy Jews? Now, there's a lot of Jews that look pretty bad. Looks like time's done a job on many Jews. And the fact of the matter is, many Jews would think this is a problem. But deep down, no Jew is ravaged by time. Deep down, the core of the Jew is totally connected to the patriarchs, totally connected to Hashem. That's what Purim taught us. As much as we looked outside to be dried and withered people, you know how fresh we were? Do you see who would have imagined? Would have imagined the Jewish people will come to such levels of tshuva on the Purim story to receive the Torah in a better way than they even received it at Sinai? Kimu v'kiblu mashikiblu kvar? They accepted it in a greater level. So when it looked like on the outside they were falling apart, but the truth is they didn't fall apart. They even became better. Now where does that come from? It doesn't come from this Pesach, this world's Pesach. It comes from the other world's Pesach. That's what it's telling us, that every Jew's got that. And that's why it says that the Vav, the sixth day of Pesach, goes with the Purim that happened before, because it's referring to what? The Pesach in the future. That's what it's going to. So that's why we go backwards. It goes backwards, because this sixth day of Pesach, it's not this sixth day of Pesach, it's another sixth day of Pesach. And that's in the future. And that's why Purim has what it has now. Because it doesn't. When we did the other holidays, well, Pesach's going to come before to put the energy in. But if you're beyond time, it can go backwards and go in any direction you want. So the future Pesach will give energy to the Purim now, because it's not dependent on, that's a different zone. Very nice. Really, you could say this on Pesach, Purim. It's a great class for Purim, Pesach. So let's take it a step further now. So let's go back to our fellow friend who cursed out God. Okay. So he found out suddenly that his father wasn't Jewish. He does not have a portion of the tribe of Dan. So he figures like this. He says, okay, I understand I don't come from a great lineage. I'm not going to argue. My father was an Egyptian. Okay, listen. Now there are prestigious tribes amongst the Jewish people. The most prestigious is which tribe? Yehuda. Kings come from him. So the guy says, listen, I know I'm a second-rate Jew. And I have no, you know, visions of me planting my tent in Yehuda. Because I don't belong there, because I come from an Egyptian father. Right? But still, I can't be worse than the tribe of Dan. Tribe of Dan was the lowest of the tribes. Tribe of Dan had many of them that, where did they live when the Jews traveled in the desert? Outside the tents of glory, with the clouds of glory. Not every person in Dan was such a tzaddik. When the Jews left Egypt, there was a fellow named Micha who took an idol with him out of Egypt through the Yam Suf, all the way till the Jews were in the desert. And guess what? The clouds of glory says, get out of here. Because, of course, you have to realize when Amalek attacked the Jews when they came out of Egypt, the question is, how did they attack the Jews? They had clouds of glory protecting them. It's like a force field. How could Amalek attack them? The answer is, not every Jew was inside the clouds of glory. The Jews who weren't so good were outside the clouds of glory. And many of them were from the tribe of Dun. So the lowest of Dun were outside of the camp. And they did sins. So he says like this, I can't be worse than them. At least let me be in the tribe of Dun. So I want to put my tent in the tribe of Dun. I at least deserve to be there. Because look, these ones that are kicked out already. So let me at least be with them. He didn't plan on being with everybody, but let me be with these guys. And they said, no, you can't. So they go to Moshe Rabbeinu. And this is the mistake. And Moshe says, no, you can't be with them. And this was his mistake. And it's the same mistake Haman made, the same mistake many people make. He made a mistake, and he thought that the people of Dun were kicked out of the clouds, but he didn't realize that they still come from Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. And no matter how bad they are, he didn't realize that they have that nekuda hapnimis, that inner point of that fire, of that inner point of that bread that doesn't get spoiled. And they have it, and it's there. You may not see it right now. Just like the Jews at Purim time didn't see it right now. And he said, you know, they're spent. They're already getting old. Dun's getting old. So at least I can be there. And he says, you made a mistake, mister. Don't think that Dun's that way. Just because he looks that way, that doesn't mean that's what he is. And you know what? And he said, what are you talking about? You mean they could be refreshed? They could be somebody? Yes. No, that can't be. Once you're going down, you're going down. You're getting old, you're getting old. He couldn't believe it could happen. So you understand that both things make sense. Both Midrashim, neither one is arguing with it. Was it because he couldn't plant the tent in Dun? Or because of the showbreads? The answer is both the same. Because the message of showbreads is, don't you think that everything is, when you're close to God, time does not affect you negatively. And he said, what is this? You're gonna have moldy chalas? Just wait. It's not going to be moldy chalas. And just like those breads defy nature, I want you to know the tribe of Dun defines nature. And if you don't believe it, then you have no connection to it. And Reb Tzadok HaKohen says an amazing idea. He says, you know, the Gemara says, if a person does not believe in the resurrection of the dead, if a Jew does not believe his body's going to be resurrected, he will not get up during the resurrection of the dead. That's what Gemara says. And the question is, what's the logic behind it? So some people think it's a punishment. You don't believe you get punished. That's not the truth. But the answer is like this. If you don't believe in something, that means you really have no connection to it to begin with. You have nothing in common with it. And you have nothing in common, it doesn't happen. It's not a punishment. It's just, it's not part of you. The fact you don't believe it means you have no connection to it. Because whatever person has a connection to it, he believes in it. If you have some kind of connection, a lot of people in Toronto have some kind of connection and they really think that the Raptors are going to win the NBA. You know why? Because they got a connection with them. No matter how preposterous it is, right? They got a connection with them. You only believe in something you feel connected with. And if you don't believe in it, it means you're not connected with it. So therefore, if he said, you know what? If a Jew gets old, he's finished. That means you're not connected to the idea of rejuvenation. So Nantaka, you're not rejuvenated and you don't belong to be there. You don't belong to be there. Now, if he would have said, you know, I believe in the Chalas, then you know what? Then he said, you know what? Then maybe there's still hope for me. He was saying, listen, there's a bunch of loser Jews. So let me be the loser Jews. We'll all be a bunch of losers. He said, you make a mistake. Those aren't loser Jews. They look like them. They're not. They're maybe out of the cloud, but they're not losers. But you think they are, so you're a loser. And therefore, you can't be with them. And that's what he suffered from that. Right? But we said, but it can't be. Right? And that's why it says he didn't believe this miracle, and he was lagleg. Remember the word lagleg. He made fun of it. Since he didn't believe in it, therefore he thought that the tribe of Dun had nothing to do and lost their hope. So really it's because he had lost his hope. But that's really not true, because none of the 12 tribes can ever be truly lost, because they're connected to Hashem in that way. But he didn't believe it, and therefore the expression of the curse was, it says he was Yikov Hashem. It's like he made a hole in Hashem, as it were, as if to say that Hashem isn't powerful enough to save everybody. Okay, now we got to bring it back to Lag BaOmer. Finally, he says, and this is what the Gemara now says. Now you understand now how the sixth day of Pesach is connected to Purim, the Purim in the past, because Purim in the past, Purim is beyond time. Purim says, you know, you may look like you're old, but you're not old. The laws of age will never apply to you. And that's why it's connected to not this Pesach, but the Pesach of the future, where no one's going to die in the Pesach of the future. And now it says that Lag BaOmer is the same day as Purim. So what happened on Lag BaOmer? Because Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai revealed, what was the main revelation of the Torah of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, the mysticism of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, was the panemius of the Torah, the inner content of the Torah, the secrets of the Torah. He was able to expound on each and every little crown of the Torah, just like his Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva, but even more so, thousands and thousands of secrets of the Torah on every letter of the Torah. You look at a letter of the Torah, you think it's an aleph. He'll show you thousands of deep interpretations. It's unbelievable. It's how fresh every letter of the Torah is. He unearthed tremendous teachings. Teachings that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't even know about. He got that from his Rebbe. Rabbi Akiva started it. Rabbi Akiva started on every crown of the Torah. Rabbi Akiva did it. And then Rabbi Shimon just took it further. Every letter, deep, deep ideas. And we know that there's 600,000 letters of the Torah, 600,000 Jewish root souls. Every Jew is connected to a letter of the Torah. So just like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai saw that every letter of the Torah has deep and profound freshness, the Torah never gets old. If it got old, there'd be nothing more to learn from it. He says, no, look how much, it's a fountain of information. It's just flowing out, and he brought it all out. Look how alive the Torah is. But he was doing more than saying how alive the Torah is. Every Jew's connected, every letter is just as alive as that. And therefore, every Jew has got a secret behind him of how great he is. It's unbelievable. And that's what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, you have to remember, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was living in a time when the Romans were persecuting the Jews unbelievably, terribly. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai lived through the era right after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. He lived through a failed messianic revolution of Shabtai Tzvi, where his Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva, thought that the Mashiach was going to come and he was destroyed, and the Romans were ruthless, killing tens of thousands of Jews. And that was the era. What do you think? The Jews were looking like they were getting old again. They were getting old again. The Second Temple was destroyed. Even the revolt failed. And there were dead bodies in Beitar that could not be buried. That's how old we were. And at that time in Jewish history, the Jews were really reeling. It was just the 10 martyrs were killed in his lifetime. His Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva, was martyred. And the Jews said, we're getting old. We're going to be finished. And he said, no. We're going to go. And that's where Hashem gave him all these, the depth of the Torah, the inner core of Torah. And that means every Jew has an inner core of such a resiliency, a freshness. Every Jew can be fresh. We're not going to give up. And this is why Lag BaOmer, it's so beautiful. Because remember this guy? The guy was the Egyptian boy. He was Lag Leg on the Chalos. Lag Leg. Lag. He's mocking it. He was mocking this idea of you can defy nature. Comes on Rishon Lechai and B'davka Lag BaOmer. You know, if you take Lag and reverse it, it's Gal. Gal Einai Ve'Abita. David Melch says, open up my eyes and I'll be able to see the wonders of creation. So it depends how you look. Is it a Lag or a Gal? But anyway, so what happened on Lag BaOmer? Lag BaOmer was the tikkun, was the repair for the sins of the students of Rabbi Akiva. Why? Because why did the students of Rabbi Akiva die? Because they didn't give, on their level, enough kavod one for the other. Because I always thought that the other guy, his chavrus, wasn't as smart as him. So I didn't have to honor him as much. In other words, they looked negatively. They said, you know, my chavrus, he's getting stale. And that's why they died. But unlike Bomer, what did Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai reveal? He says that each Jew has this inner core that's indestructible. And even though you can't see it, and the lowest Jew, but he's still so important. The lowest Jew is so important. You think he's old and faded and he's finished? He's not. But what do you mean? I don't see anything. The answer is, and what do we say? Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, he revealed what part of the four parts of the Torah? Pshat, Remesh, Drush, Sod. Sod, the secret. The secret of every Jew. That just like if you see somebody doing something, you know, and what he does doesn't seem to make any sense, and you ask him, what are you doing? He says, well, I'll tell you, it's a secret. It's a secret. There's a secret. There's a reason behind it. You don't know it. If you knew it, you'd say it was okay. But, okay, it's a secret? Okay. Then I'm not going to ask any questions. It's a secret. There's a reason why you did it. Okay. You have a good reason. You can't tell. Okay, you can't tell. And all of a sudden, it answers all the questions. Answers that. How can this? There's a reason. There's a real reason. If I could tell you the reason, you'd agree with me. Then you stop asking questions. If you believe the person's honest with you, you don't ask any questions. So we have a lot of kashas. We have a lot of kashas at every Jew. You know, why does Hashem love every Jew so much? And when they're so low, and the answer is, it's a secret. Secret is, every Jew is holier than you think they are. Every Jew is holier than you think they are. And where do we get? We get this all from Rav Shimon bar Yochai. And that's the connection of Purim to Lag BaOmer. Because they're exactly the same. Purim, we were able to see that the Jews don't get old. And the Jewish people who look so bad, but if you could find the path to their inner point, you'll see how great they can be. They'll do tshuva, they'll accept the Torah like they never had it before, because it's in them to be that way. Right? Even though maybe it doesn't look that way, but we have to look at every Jew as a youthful being. And that's what we got to realize. The Yetzer Hara has a big job on us. Maybe not so much for you, but the rest of us, we get a little older and we begin to think, I don't have much more to do. I don't have much more to produce. I'm past my prime. All this mishigasa, midlife crisis, all these things. You know what? Narishkeit. It's just the Yetzer Hara. If a person knew how much youth and vitality was inside themselves, you would be shocked. And you know what? You gotta believe in Rav Shimon bar Yochai. That's how we started. If you have a muna in Rav Shimon, even though you say, but I don't see it. You don't have to see it. Rav Shimon bar Yochai knows it's true. That's why secular Israelis, they run there. They don't even know but something inside of them knows, even though they don't know. In their conscious, they don't know. But their subconscious knows. They're drawn. They cannot stay away from him. Because he is the representative of that's the log. That's the log. And that's the connection to Purim. And now we understand why Purim is the hamtakas hadin, the sweetening of the judgment. What's the sweetening of the judgment? What does judgment usually mean? How do you normally judge things? You go to court, you bring evidence, right? So let's say you have a simple thing. Look at that guy. Went into a convenience store. He pulls out a gun. He says, give me $500. Okay, give him the $500. Goes out. They call the police. Police catch him. Take him to court. What do you got to say? Well, we have a camera. Camera says you pulled out a gun. You took $500. Now, what do you got to say for yourself? Now, right now we're talking about judgment now, right? What's going to happen? How do we judge? We judge people based on the facts, right? Now the guy says, okay. So the judge says, okay, you see the video here? Do you deny that you did this? No, I can't deny. Okay, what do you have to say for yourself? Well, I'll tell you, I had a very good reason for stealing the money. Would you like to share it with us? I can't, it's a secret. What's the judge going to do? Well, I'll tell you what. You go to jail for 10 years, and the guy says, why? It's a secret, too. You know, but that's judgment. That's judgment. And guess what? During these 33 days, Hashem is judging us. He judged the students of Rabbi Akiva. He judged them hard. and they were punished badly. But now we come to the 33rd day, the day of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. The day of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, he sweetens the judgment. Because if we look at the 7 weeks, every week between Pesach and Shavuos, we work on a different midah, a different characteristic. We're in the fifth week. What's the name of the characteristic for this week? Hod. Hod is the fifth. It's in practical sense, it's humility. In English, they call it splendor, but it's really humility. Now, hod, and then every day within the week, we look at an aspect of every one of the midos. And there's seven midos, and we look at the seven aspects of every mida. You know, let's say kindness. There's kindness. We look at the kindness of kindness, the control of kindness, the mercy of kindness, the consistency of kindness, the humility of kindness. There's aspects. So Lag BaOmer, the 33rd day, is what aspect of Hod? It's the Hod of Hod. The humility of humility. It's the Spitz humility. You don't get more humble than this. It's the top Hod Sheba Hod. Now, the word Hod comes from the word also Modim. Modim means to admit, to confess, to surrender. Now, think about this. Who is the first, and to thank. Gemara says, who is the first person in the history of the world to thank Hashem? In the Bible, the words of the Bible. First person. No? Leah. When she gave birth to her fourth son, Yehuda. Yehuda comes from the word hod. Hod, to thank. Hapam oda es Hashem. Now I thank Hashem. Why did she thank Hashem? What did she say? Why am I thanking him? Because I got more than I was supposed to get, because the calculation was that Yaakov would have four wives, each one would have three kids, and she already has four kids before anybody has any. So I thank Hashem that I have more than I'm supposed to have. That means, according to the law, what was I supposed to get? According to the law, I'm supposed to get three. And I got what? I got more than I'm supposed to get, even though I don't know why I should get it. Right? I have no reason. And I could be the lowest. And Leah felt she was the lowest. She was not loved by Yaakov. And she could have, and she had weak eyes, and she could have been a dried out person. And Hashem said, look, you could have four kids out of nowhere. And then she says, you know, I thank Hashem for having more than what I deserve. So now when we come to Lag BaOmer, if we're working on our midos, and we're now working on humility of humility, humbleness of humbleness, thanksgiving of thanksgiving, where we're saying, Hashem, we're not worthy of all that you should do for us. Then Hashem says, that makes you worthy. That makes you worthy. And then Hashem says, you know what? It's worthy if you act that way to me. So then I'm going to look deep inside for you and see and look at you, and I'll look at that excuse as an excuse. And that's the sweetening of the judgment. That's why the people stop dying finally on Lag BaOmer. Where Hashem is willing to look at us in the secret of who we are. There's only one condition that you have to have to that. To be the same condition that the Egyptian boy who cursed out God failed to have. You got to believe it. If that one who cursed God would have just had believed that the people have done were not second-class people, and he would not have to be a second-class person, he would have lived. If he would have believed that the challis would stay fresh, his life would have been fresh. So on Lag BaOmer, we have to believe that we are fresh, and that Hashem loves us more than never stopped loving us as much as he loves us now. And even though we think we're so bad and dried out and old, it's not so at all. And who taught us that? Reb Shimon bar Yochai. That's from the Pnimius HaTorah. When you look at the inner aspect of Torah, that you see there's unbelievable amounts. That's what we have to think about in Lag BaOmer, that we have so much more, and we daven to Reb Shimon bar Yochai to let us appreciate that we have it and we should benefit from it. So let me close with a very nice story that fits in very nice. One of these famous Karlbach stories. But it's not Karlbach. He takes Chassidic stories and just... Anyway, there was a great Hasidic Rebbe called Reb Mendel of Vorker. And he had a grandson, I believe, was named Reb Shimon. And he was a very, very holy person. And he had thousands of Hasidim. And one time a Yid came to this Rav Shimon Vorker, whatever. And he says, Rebbe, I live in a village far away. And I'm the only Jew in the village, which wasn't unusual in those days, because the Jews were so spread around, they had to make parnassah. Sometimes you're the only Jew in the village. He says, I have three sons and one daughter, and I try my best to teach them about Yiddishkeit. Hi, but I got very bad news. For some, I don't know why, my daughter, she got messed, she hanging around this Polish shagetz, a drunken Polish guy, and she's going to marry him. But the condition his parents made for her to marry him, she has to convert and be baptized. And right now she's at a convent, and she's going to get married in 2 weeks. Rebbe, please, can you help me? Now the Rebbe certainly could. Wait, I got to make the story fast. It's right 9:14. So because her mindset, the Rebbe says, I got to go fast now. The Rebbe says, okay, I'll take care of it. He goes to the city where the convent is. He finds a Polish boy. He says, do me a favor. Give me $50. Take this letter and give it to this girl. There's a girl in a convent. Give her this letter. In the letter it writes. She opens up the letter. He says, starting on Sunday, the next time you see her in church, starting tomorrow, my chas and I are waiting at the street corner until you come. So the next Sunday, him and the student are waiting at the street corner. Sunday goes by, she doesn't come. Monday, Tuesday doesn't come, because she didn't see it, she's not going to come. Gets her Wednesday night, she comes running to the street corner. And the Rebbe says, I'm so glad to see you. And she says, you know the truth, when I read that letter first, I was so upset, I wanted to throw it away. I didn't want my parents involved with me and this and that. I didn't want to hear. But as days passed, I couldn't stop thinking that, you know what, that you, the Rebbe, you're waiting for me every day. And you're waiting me for day, and you may wait a week, and you're going to wait a month, and you're going to wait a year until I come. And that made an impact on me. And then for some reason, I started missing my parents, my brothers, my former life. I didn't really know what happened. I started to understand who I really am. And then tonight, suddenly I said to myself, Gevalt, I'm a Jew. What am I doing in a convent? I got to run away from my life. And that's why I'm here today. So you see that Reb Shimon, he believed that she wasn't worn out. He believed in her, and that's why she believed in him. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai believes in us, we have to believe in him. And hopefully we should all be zocha to a very refreshing Lag BaOmer. Okay, shkoyach.
Thank you.